Welcome, true crime enthusiasts, to a story that will leave you speechless. It's a tale of deception, greed, and a man who thought he could outsmart the system. But little did he know, the law always catches up. We present to you the shocking case of Lawrence Martin Burke, a Colorado businessman who thought he could get away with tax evasion, but ended up with a 15-year prison sentence and a hefty restitution fee. What started as a simple tax evasion case quickly spiraled into a web of fraud, illegal firearms possessions, threats against the IRS, and ties to notorious tax protest organizations. But was Martin Burke truly the mastermind behind this scheme? Or was he simply a pawn in a larger game and a victim of harsh sentencing? Join us as we delve into the dark and twisted world of tax fraud and explore the motives behind Martin Burke's actions. And as we uncover the truth behind this case, we'll also examine the controversial world of tax protest organizations and their role in this story. So buckle up, it's going to be a wild ride as we bring you the true story about the tax evasion case of Lawrence Martin Burke in an episode we're calling From Log Homes to Lockup, The Unbelievable Tale of Martin Burke. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the third episode of Tax Crime Junkies, the podcast about true tax crimes. I'm your host, Dom, and with me is my lovable co-host, Tom.
Hello, Dominique. Our podcast brings you true tax crimes and financial scandal. If you're a tax planner, tax professional, or just interested in the financial world, this is the right space to learn the inner details of prosecutions related to the U.S. tax law. Join us every week as we tell exciting stories on tax and audit illegalities, what went wrong, the sentences imposed, and what happened to the guilty and sometimes the innocent.
Today, we're diving into the outrageous case of Lawrence Martin, who goes by Marty Burke. He's a man who thought he could outsmart the system, but ended up paying the ultimate price. Burke was the owner of Terryall River Log Homes, LLC, located in Colorado, and it was a thriving log home building company, but he failed to file and or pay his federal taxes despite the company's success. And as we know, it's only a matter of time before the IRS steps in and begins collection efforts. But Burke hired a tax firm to prepare his delinquent returns. However, he concealed some retirement distributions. And he went ahead and filed the tax returns, but Burke refused to pay what he owed, and he declared himself a tax defier.
Yikes, that's a whole world, tax protesters.
Yeah.
Burke's refusal to pay continually for 12 years also included threatening messages to the IRS, using now discredited arguments from various tax protester organizations, and playing tricks to stop collection efforts. Burke was ultimately convicted in 2019 and sentenced to 5 years in prison and 3 years of supervised release, along with a restitution order of $1.8 million. You might think that's where the story ends. Oh no, it goes down a dark, dark path, and you'll want to stay tuned to learn what happened next and what he did to end up in prison with a sentence of actually 15 years.
You know, this is a long case, Tom. It started in 1998, and he was finally convicted in October of 2019. So he made it quite a long ways, albeit with a lot of wrangling and arguing. But let's go back to the beginning. He was a middle-aged owner, Lawrence Marty Burke, and he owned this company in Colorado. He was a builder and started the company called Terryall River Log Homes. It's an LLC that he formed so he could build and sell log homes. And Mr. Burke specialized, Tom, in what are known as log cabin kit homes. Have you ever heard of kit homes?
Yeah, they're basically allow you to build it for yourself, right? You get the materials and then you put in the labor and you're good to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And apparently these log home kits are really popular in more natural settings like Colorado. And so there's these pre-designed floor plans with different styles and vaulted ceilings and open concept floor plans. And the builders of these kits basically deliver the home in pre-assembled sections or with panels that you assemble together. And the idea is you're supposed to be able to do it on your own. Some people choose to do that with a builder. And Marty Burke got started in this business. He previously worked for Honest Abe Log Homes as a salesman, and he decided to start his own business selling the kits as a representative of Honest Abe and assisting his customer with assembling the home. And I took a peek at these, Tom, and I got to tell you, they're very impressive. They're beautiful. Beautiful homes. And the kits can cost anywhere from $100,000. If you do it yourself, it can cost about $200,000 for a finished log home.
Wow, that sounds like a really profitable business. But let's back up a minute. Before his career in log cabins, Marty Burke had a long career in both the military and working for defense contractors serving the United States. Now, during that time, Mr. Burke paid his tax just like everybody else. But then something happened. He took a business law class at his local college. He heard from a professor that it was important to see if the tax laws applied to particular income. And as tax professionals, Dominique, you and I know that. We always apply the law to someone's situation. But this lesson stuck with him a different kind of way and raised all kinds of questions in his mind about actually the legality of our tax system. He began learning all he could to understand his rights as a U.S. citizen and whether that impacted his ability to be taxed by the U.S. And he started getting caught up with some really shady organizations. He met up with We the People and Tax Honesty People, and this started to really affect how he viewed the law. Marty honestly believed in these tax protester arguments. So much so, he stopped filing tax returns starting in 1998.
Okay, Tom, we'll get into that and the legal arguments being made here. But generally, how does that work? Did Marty make an official declaration of some sort or a statement on the top of his tax returns filed saying, "I don't believe in this"?
It's usually not that blatant, Dom. Usually a tax protester or someone who's a non-filer, they just stop filing. Crickets. IRS stops hearing from them.
Got it. So then, of course, the IRS catches on and they soon began reaching out to Marty to pay his tax. And at some point in the IRS collection efforts, they actually visited him in his Colorado home and explained why he needed to pay his taxes. So that's how it goes then. I guess eventually they find you and they ask you to voluntarily comply and pay.
Absolutely. Once they've identified there's a compliance issue, they want you to be voluntarily compliant with the law. That's the goal of the IRS. And if you don't, then the notices start to arrive in the mail and more direct enforcement efforts.
And all while this is going on, his new business is taking off and thriving.
Yes. In 2001, the IRS started looking for the returns. Knock, knock, Mr. Burke, where are your tax returns? So he began calling and writing letters, asking really pointed questions about the law. He wanted specific answers to his particular situation, and the IRS actually did respond.
With what? What did they respond with? The Internal Revenue Code? I've got that book. It's pretty heavy. I bet it costs a lot of postage to mail that thing.
No, it wasn't with the code. In fact, the IRS has its own internal policies on how to deal with tax protesters and the questions they ask. So they have form letters, they have booklets that they send as soon as it appears they have another tax protester on their radar. In this case, one of the letters they send is letter 3175.
That's the letter that says, don't listen to people who say you don't have to pay taxes.
That's the one.
I've got it here, the form letter. Here's what it says, quote, federal tax laws are passed by Congress and signed by the president. The Internal Revenue Service is responsible for administering federal tax laws fairly and ensuring that taxpayers comply with the laws. We do not have authority to change the laws. There are people who encourage others to deliberately violate our nation's tax laws. It would be unfortunate if you were to rely on their opinions. These persons take legal statements out of context and claim that they are not subject to tax laws. Many offer advice that is false and misleading, hoping to encourage others to join them. Generally, their advice isn't free. Taxpayers who purchase this kind of information often wind up paying more in taxes, interest, and penalties, including fines and possible imprisonment. Federal courts have consistently ruled against the arguments you have made. Therefore, we will not respond to future correspondence concerning these issues, period.
And it was that last line, therefore, we will not respond to future correspondence about concerning these issues, that really irritated Marty Burke.
Yes, right. According to Marty, he had this genuine desire to understand the answer to key questions posed by the protesters. And the IRS response to these specific questions is they just responded with a standard form letter and a brochure. Nothing personal about that.
Now, Dominique, even if an employee did answer his questions, you and I know we generally can't rely on the advice or statements from someone working at the IRS. That alone does not create authority for a position anyway.
Right.
So after a few years of the notices and warnings of enforcement actions, Burke starts thinking, maybe I'm wrong. The IRS really doesn't seem to be messing around. They are pursuing him.
That's right, Tom. And he gets another 3175 letter in 2004. So this is about 6 years after not filing anything. So no tax returns filed. And again in 2006, he got yet another 3175 letter. He even filed a lawsuit to try to force the Supreme Court to answer the questions he has posed. But of course, they denied his case. But at that point, he gets dejected. He even tells the IRS, I want to come back into the system. I'm going to file back tax returns. And he says, I also told you I no longer deem it appropriate to argue the application of tax laws or other legal matters with the IRS, but to allow the courts to resolve it. And based on our conversation of yesterday, I probably owe some good people at the IRS an apology for my past actions in this matter.
Having dealt myself with tax protesters in the past, this sounds promising. He's seen the light. Many do not ever see the light. And he even goes to a CPA firm. He gives them $10,000 to prepare 8 years of late tax returns. Now, he says he gave them everything they asked for. His QuickBooks files, his records, and his statements. Now, Dominique, I actually do a lot of these cases myself. The difference is that my clients actually want to get in compliance with the law. As we're about to find out, Burke put on a good show, but it seems in the end, he really didn't want to comply fully with the tax law. He attempted a scheme in order to withdraw $400,000 from his retirement account without paying tax on it. We don't know how he came up with this idea, but he came to believe that if he received these funds in a corporation, he'd somehow avoid tax. And of course, he didn't provide his new CPAs with any information on the withdrawal. Again,
that's the catch-all, right? You just open an entity, put it in there, and poof, it's tax-free.
Absolutely.
So he finally gets the returns filed, and he's caught up. He's back in the system, as he calls it. All is well now, right?
Not exactly, Dominique. He ends up owing about $168,000 on those delinquent returns. And now it's time to pay up or make repayment arrangements with the service. Filing delinquent returns is honestly just the first step in getting back in compliance with the IRS. It can often, for many taxpayers, be a long multi-year journey that includes dealing with the collection division of the IRS.
I bet. Well, and once you get behind the ball on making those payments, it can just overwhelm you and seem impossible even to get out from under the debt.
Yes, absolutely.
Tax returns are filed. One would think that he'd pay them even though he didn't account for some of the money, but he didn't. It was, in fact, at this point that he decided to become a tax defier or a tax protester. And so each time the IRS sent him a reminder to pay his tax, he'd write back to them quoting some famous tax protester organizations like the We the People Foundation or Tax Honesty. And some of these messages contain blatant threats to the IRS. And so that brings us to a really interesting dynamic of defaulting in tax due to negligence versus defaulting in tax payment as a matter of principle. And, you know, there are these organizations, a lot of them start out as nonprofits, believe it or not. And they're dedicated to this idea of refusing to pay as a matter of principle. And they're spreading a lot of messages. In the early to mid 2000s, they were really active in filing lots of lawsuits, and they kind of started gaining this cult-like following. Do we know more about these organizations, and what do they have in common with Burke, Tom?
If you're familiar with tax discussions and tax news, you may have heard of the popular tax protester organization, We the People, founded by Robert Schultz. WTP was particularly popular pre-2010 for bringing several charges against the IRS and the American tax system. It has also lent support to several tax protesters and helped them to scheme against the IRS. Its members have also led and held several anti-tax protests. Their main argument is that no law directly requires Americans to pay tax, and that companies do not have the right to withhold tax from employee paychecks. WTP also maintains an argument that the government fraudulently declared that the Sixth Amendment had been ratified to cheat citizens into paying taxes. These arguments are equally not entertained by the court and have been pronounced as absurd, ridiculous, frivolous, and frivolous squared. The government's simple response throughout the years has been that a person who meets all the requirements must file a tax return, must pay the tax that is owed.
So thus, the 3175 letter was sent replying to what they consider frivolous arguments, and it's because they've heard all of this before. In fact, part of this case was to bring in the woman who authored the 3175 letter as a means of dealing with these protesters.
One of the lawyers he relied on for information, Larry Beecraft, was sanctioned in court. Bob Schultz, the We the People founder, actually died in prison. We'll get a chance to hear from his son next time. Most of the professionals Marty cited as supporting his arguments have been disbarred or had licenses revoked.
So let's break that down, Tom, the tax defier argument. Many people got to know of We the People in 2007. and the organization and its members filed a case in all 50 states. Now, they take up other causes aside from tax protesting. This particular case that they file in all 50 states had a problem with using electronic voting machines to count votes. And so they called for the states to go back to hand counting of ballots for a truly free election. And unsurprisingly, this case was thrown out of court because they lacked the standing to bring it in the first place. And so what's interesting is we see that with a lot of their cases, that they lack the standing to even challenge these arguments that they're bringing forth. And so that's not exactly where We the People's legal tussles with the government started. Schultz, who is the founder himself, failed to file tax returns from 2001 to 2004. And kind of like Marty Burke, he wasn't cooperative with the IRS. And he's since sought to block IRS activities through protests and petitions.
That's right. In one such case against the IRS, Robert Schultz filed motions to quash administrative summonses by the IRS. But of course, the court dismissed this as well, saying it had no jurisdiction over the matter. This was especially because the IRS had not yet initiated enforcement actions against him. Mm-hmm. In another lawsuit that many tax protesters like to cite, WTP argued that based on the First Amendment, people have a right to petition their government for a redress of grievances. Well, that's true, but not the way they're thinking about it, because based on this, they said the government had an enforceable duty to respond to a taxpayer's demand for explanations as to why they should have to pay the income tax. They said further that if the government does not respond to their inquiries, it meant they were somehow free from paying income tax. No response, no payment.
That sounds exactly like what Marty Burke was doing. The court rejected this argument in May 2007, and the foundation appealed, and they sent it to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court flatly declined to accept the case.
Well, that's just shocking again.
Since then, Schultz and We the People have been involved in a tax fraud scheme that has cost the U.S. Treasury more than an estimated $21 million. They also promoted an illegal tax shelter and distributed several materials to people on how to stop paying tax. And as kind of to punish them for this, the court finally revoked the foundation's tax-exempt status in 2010.
Wow. It took that long? You would have thought that would have been done much sooner based on what they were doing. Yeah. But it does make sense that Burke found comfort in the words and actions of these different organizations, especially after realizing he was neck deep in federal tax debt. The problem is taking these protester arguments and using them with the IRS just made his tax situation worse. This began the IRS treating his failure to pay as an intentional act rather than the typical failure to pay due to negligence. And that's a much more serious matter with the service. One interesting fact that most people don't realize is that refusing to pay your tax, even intentionally, doesn't necessarily constitute tax evasion. While the law does require you pay your tax, in order to evade tax, many times you have to take active steps to conceal your money or your assets. So at this point, he wasn't actively committing tax evasion. But that soon changed.
It all changed in the blink of an eye, really, Tom. At some point, the IRS took active steps to seize money from his bank accounts as a lien for the tax owed. Burke's bank account was levied and he lost $16,000. So if we thought he was mad about them not writing to him personally, watch out when they take his money.
Exactly.
But after they notified Burke, he tried to shield his money from the IRS. So he's now learning from their actions and trying to stay two steps ahead. And so anytime somebody deposited money into his account, he would immediately purchase cashier's checks to make his balance seem really low. And that way he's got a low balance to serve as proof that he can't afford to pay the tax. And in his mind, he figured the IRS was unable to seize his money. Also during this time, Tom, the IRS finally filed SFRs for Marty. So let's talk about what that means.
Absolutely. An SFR, or a substitute for return, is a process in the Internal Revenue Code that allows the IRS to essentially create and execute a return against a taxpayer who fails to voluntarily file a return. And here is the 30-second summary of how this works. IRS determines there's a filing requirement. IRS uses third-party data it has, usually just things like W-2s, 1099s, although if an agent is doing the SFR, they can look at bank records too. They prepare a return and give it to the taxpayer and say, sign it. And if they don't sign it, then they go to the next part of that same statute and they literally execute it against the taxpayer. Now, the taxpayer has the right to go to the U.S. tax court and challenge it, but if they don't go to tax court, the taxpayer now owes the tax on that return, which 99% of the time will overstate the real tax that they owe if they had just simply filed an accurate return to begin with.
Of course. You know, if the IRS is filing returns for you, they're going to use the least generous method possible and summons your bank statements. They add up all your deposits for the year and call it all income. They interviewed the auditor on the stand in this case, and she testified the reason she remembers this particular case is because one of the vendors was called Honest Abe. This person had not filed tax returns, and so it was one of the first non-filed returns that she had had assigned to her. So it really stuck out. Honest Abe, but the guy who's cheating on taxes.
I mean, the irony there is just, you know, you can't make this stuff up. I mean, honestly.
No. So by this time, his tax, his debts, and liabilities were way over $2 million from 1998 to 2005. Of course, you know, that's per the IRS. And
right.
You've got him in the collection system. So they keep sending notices and notices of levies. And that's a lot.
Because there are unpaid tax debts, federal tax liens also were attaching to his properties. In fact, three of them owned by Mr. Burke. Now, a federal tax lien essentially secures the IRS's interest in the property. And this automatically arises once a tax goes unpaid. But if you don't take care of your tax matters, the IRS files a notice of federal tax lien in the local courthouse in the public records. And so anybody can find out about your tax debts. A federal tax lien not only applies to that, but any real or personal property you currently own or may acquire in the future. Its reach is extensive.
Marty, and I'm sure Marty's wife, Mrs. Marty, certainly didn't want to lose their money or properties. So lo and behold, Marty starts communicating again with IRS personnel. Here are some of the things that he was saying, Tom. We urge the IRS to cease and desist any and all collection actions against us at this time, as further action may incriminate you personally or anyone at the IRS who may be willing to sign a verified assessment necessary to proceed in a civil suit. Also, we hereby demand that the IRS releases all notices of federal tax liens currently filed into the public record. The reference to these other letters clearly show the intent of the IRS is to deprive us of property under the color of law. Our position in this matter remains unchanged, and we will defend ourselves and our property by whatever means are necessary. It is the right of a sovereign people.
Dom, listen to these statements. They can easily be interpreted and were interpreted by the IRS as a direct threat. And when you threaten the IRS or federal tax officials, this can actually lead to further risk of criminal prosecution.
Yeah, I bet. Did he ever end up filing those tax returns that he paid $10,000 for?
Finally, in response to one of the collection efforts, I mean, can you imagine the stack of notices that Burke has over a 15-year period? Probably enough paper to actually build a log cabin. So yes, he did file the returns prepared with this statement, and this probably is not going to surprise you. The enclosed returns have been signed under duress. He actually wrote that on the return.
Duress, probably for both the IRS and Marty Burke.
Exactly. Martin Burke was eventually found guilty in October in 2019. Government charged him with tax evasion, and he was sentenced to 5 years in the federal correctional institution in Florence, Colorado. On top of the $2 million in tax debts from 1998 to 2005, he also refused to file any tax returns between 2006 and 2008, and ultimately owed close to $3.5 million.
Well, that's a long period of time. Think about it, 1998 to when it's finally said and done in 2019. We're talking about over 20 years here. And of course, as they usually do, the court also ordered that in addition to the prison sentence, he should also have 3 years of supervised release and pay the IRS a restitution of $1.8 million. But wait, wasn't he looking at $3.5 million in terms of what he evaded?
Yeah, it looks that way. But just remember, restitution is generally imposed by the court. And in some criminal cases, that's just the first step. There can later be a civil examination following a criminal conviction that determines the true scope of the tax owed by the taxpayer.
So he may have made out in this case.
Exactly.
Now, Tom, here's where the craziness comes in. If you thought this wasn't crazy enough, even though Burke was ordered to start his prison sentence in November of 2019, he didn't. His probation officer left a voicemail reminding him that he was required to show up, but he didn't respond to the voicemail, and instead, he fled Colorado. But that's not all. What put a final nail in the coffin for Burke were the illegally obtained weapons that he escaped with.
That's right. He fled Colorado with a fully automatic assault rifle, two pistols, over a dozen loaded magazines, hundreds of additional rounds of ammunition, ballistic helmets, ballistic vests, and gas masks. Gas masks? Why? Your guess is as good as ours. One would assume he was planning to take down anyone who tried to stop him, meaning the IRS, government agents, the marshals, whoever stood in his way.
It's wild. I've seen the evidence pictures of these, Tom, and it looks like a one-man militia. And for those of you who want to check it out, just visit our show notes at taxcrimejunkies.com. I've got a picture of all of the things that Burke took with him on his little journey. And so now he's on the run. The government sought a warrant for his arrest on November 22nd, and the court granted that, of course. And a big issue that he left behind his car in the rearview mirror.
You mean besides his prison sentence?
Exactly. No, he left some unfinished business for his attorney. See, if Burke wanted to appeal his conviction, he has to do so timely.
Right.
And he left without saying goodbye to his lawyer. So the attorney just went ahead and filed the appeal on his behalf.
So Marty's on the run. He's got a weapons arsenal in his vehicle, and he's headed for...
Disneyland?
Close, Florida. Since he's on the lam, the government moved to dismiss his appeal in December.
So as of January 8th, when Mr. Burke still failed to turn up, the court granted the government's order to dismiss that appeal. And the basis of that judgment was the doctrine of fugitive disentitlement. This is a principle that rests on the idea that an appellate court can dismiss the appeals case of any defendant who's currently a fugitive from justice. And the thought process behind this is that fleeing disentitles a defendant from appealing as he's presented himself unworthy of being considered dignified before the law. Based on this, Burke lost his chance to appeal his tax evasion case. I bet he didn't know that before he left. After Burke's arrest in January of 2020, he was in custody until October, when he was finally arraigned before the court for his final conviction.
And just in time to catch COVID from his cellmate.
Probably. Now, remember, Marty had already gotten 5 years for the tax crimes, but now he has more piling on because he took off. So now he's facing charges for having weapons and for being a fugitive. And so the court sentenced Burke to an additional 6 years and 6 months imprisonment for failing to surrender. And in addition, other agencies got involved. Now we have the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and they got involved because of his illegal weapons ownership. You know, as soon as you're convicted of a felony, Tom, you're not allowed to have weapons of this nature.
So altogether, he got a sentence of 11 years and 5 months. So fleeing more than doubled his initial sentence.
Eek.
Now, the argument against this judgment was that Burke was a 60-year-old man, and 20 years on the 60 wasn't really fair to him. His attorney insisted that the judge and the prosecutor misconstrued the reason Burke fled.
Oh, really?
Right.
He fled because he wanted to go to prison? That's why he fled?
Well, he claims, or what Mr. Burke claims, that his wife had dementia and his 90-year-old mom had breast cancer. So the lawyer mentioned that as the sole caregiver, Burke must have been in personal turmoil, couldn't bear to say goodbye, considering that they, his loved ones, may not be alive after his release from prison.
Yeah, I mean, that makes this case extra sad, Tom, but doesn't sound like a reasonable argument to me, because who was taking care of Marty's wife and mother when he was running from the law? I think it's safe to say that nobody in court bought this argument, considering the slightly inconvenient amount of illegal weapons that he took when he escaped, and the fact that he didn't exactly run home. By the accounts, he ran away from home almost as far away as you could get.
Now, Dominic, do you think he's filing his tax returns from federal prison?
I imagine now that he finally does not legally have to, unless he's got some source of income greater than $13,000.
The truth is, it's not just Mr. Burke or members of We the People who have issues with the American tax system and the IRS, but it's dangerous to rely on the assertion that there's no real requirement to pay tax under our laws. It is just simply false. The courts have rejected every single argument against the idea that the federal government does not have the right to tax its citizens. The idea that only citizens who are federal employees have to pay tax is just as ridiculous as the idea that the IRS, constituted explicitly for federal tax purposes, shouldn't have the jurisdiction to access tax. The Department of Justice's Tax Defiers Initiative once said precisely, quote, "If you owe taxes, you must pay them, period." There are also thousands of Americans who don't buy into any of these theories, but somehow fail to file their yearly tax returns for a variety of reasons. But this will undoubtedly breed trouble one day. The IRS's technology is getting much more sophisticated, and it's no longer going to be a matter of if, but when. This still doesn't preclude administrative irregularities or incorrect tax charges. If you are a victim of either, you need help. Find a competent tax lawyer to help you fight.
Unfortunately, Burke's case is one of many, and a simple tax evasion case just kept going downhill until it earned the worst possible conviction. And that's a wrap for today. Thank you for joining us on today's episode of Tax Crime Junkies. If you would like to share your opinions about Marty Burke's case or any concerns about the American tax systems or your opinion, you can reach out to us at taxcrimejunkies.com. Also, remember to subscribe to get notified when we're back with our next episode. And if you loved this one, please jump on to wherever you get your podcasts to give us a 5-star review.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Tax Crime Junkies. Remember, as we uncover the stories of tax fraud and white-collar crime, we're not just exposing the criminals, but also the loopholes in the system. We hope you'll join us again next week as we continue our mission to find the loopholes that went left open and close them for good. Until next time, remember, every crime has a trail that leads to the truth.